You're listening to Rendezvous with a Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rendezvous with a Writer, where readers and writers meet.
And story is everything.
We're your hosts tonight, Jim and Bobby Bell. You've just been listening to Hot Texas by the Hot Texas Swing Band. Our friend Alex Dormont, so nice of him to provide that music.
We are delighted you're with us tonight for episode 134 with our special guests. We have a full house tonight. Henry C. Park is with us tonight. It is the first of the month, and Ann Hillerman returns, and we are delighted they're both on screen. Hello, Henry.
Hello. How are you guys?
We're good. Where are you joining us from tonight?
I'm back in Brooklyn. Go figure. Where Billy the Kid was born.
That's very good. And Ann Hillerman is with us once again, returning. Hello, Ann.
Hi, Ann. Hello. What a pleasure to be with you tonight.
It's great.
We're so delighted to see you. Yeah. So, of course, Henry will kind of kick us off. And he is the author of... What are you the author of, Henry?
Greatest Westerns Ever Made and the People Who Made Them.
That's the one.
And Ann Hillerman, we're going to be talking about, oh my gosh, here it is in duo.
Shadow of the Sauces.
Her newest novel came out, like, what, 10 days ago, a week ago, Ann? 9 days ago?
April 23rd.
April 23rd. My goodness. We are so excited to have these two fabulous folks with us tonight. So, Henry, what's happening? Give us Henry's Western Roundup.
I will do that. I've got some very good news, especially for fans of Western writing, which ought to be everyone watching or listening to us. How long do you think it's been since a Louis L'Amour novel has been filmed?
Oh.
Anyone?
I don't know.
Tell us. Well, tell us
one time.
Can you believe a quarter of a century? The last one was 2001's excellent Crossfire Trail, starring Tom Selleck and directed by Simon Winsor, the same team that brought you Quigley Down Under. That was from TNT, and Tom Selleck told me that they had just set up another L'Amour, The Empty Land, when there was a management change at Turner, and it just went away. And now we're going to have another. The new film, which is now in pre-production, is based on the novel Flint, which was first published in 1960. Josh Holloway stars. He starred in the series Lost, played Rourke on Yellowstone, and he's about to star in a new Max series called Duster, where he's a getaway driver. It's to be written and directed by Ryan Whitaker, and among the producers is Beau L'Amour, Louis' son. Holloway says that he and Beau have been trying to film the book for nearly 20 years.
Wow. Wow.
So, it's been a long time coming. Tomorrow, Friday, Rust will arrive in theaters.
That's that one.
A tragic accident where a live bullet was put into a gun being handled by star Alec Baldwin, and it fired, killing the cinematographer Alina Hutchins and wounding writer-director Joel Souza. The production was shut down for about 2 years for investigations and trials. And when they went back to camera, some of the younger roles had to be recast because the kids had grown too much. Bianca Klein finished shooting the film, and they preserved Hutchins' work as they could. Set in 1880s Wyoming, a young man played by Patrick Scott McDermott is sentenced to hang when he accidentally kills a rancher. Baldwin plays his aging outlaw grandfather, who busts him out of the Huascal, and they take off for Mexico. The cast also features Travis Fimmel, Francis Fisher, and Jake Busey. it's opening pretty wide. So check your local listings. You know, maybe the best way, the best tribute we can pay to Miss Hutchins is to see the work she was so proud of. Mm-hmm. Now, a new contemporary Western arrived on Netflix April 17th, Ransom Canyon, kind of a Yellowstone with a lower body count. It's about the intersecting lives and love three ranching families in Texas. Josh Duhamel, I think that's how you say it, and Minka Kelly star. And happily, James Brolin is back in the saddle and looking crusty for this one. And a very busy, very talented actor who started out playing Crazy Horse in Into the West is also in it. But of course, the most important news is that Dark Winds Season 3 wrapped this last Sunday. And our guest, Ann Hillerman, is not only the daughter of Tony Hillerman, she also has continued his Leaphorn, Chi, and Manuelito novels, and she's a producer on Dark Winds. And tell me, do we know if there will be a Season 4?
There will be, yes. Yes.
There you go.
You heard it here first.
That would be true.
Yeah. It's true. It's true.
Excellent. Well, now, the first two seasons were six episodes each, but three was eight episodes. How do you like having that much more time to tell your story?
Oh, it's great. It's really great. I love the season that just finished. I think the cast, the directors, everybody did an excellent, excellent job.
Yeah.
Right. I did, too. Now, is that extra running time why you combined two of your father's novels, Dance Hall of the Dead and The Sinister Pig? And I'll hold up the covers just to show you that I read everything.
I have to say those wonderful stories served as the inspiration for the script writers. They took a lot of creative, they spent a lot of creative effort in developing the episodes. And like I said, the stories inspired them, but they don't exactly follow Dad's stories. But I really love them. I think they did a fine, fine job.
Oh, yes. Having just read both books back to back, both of them really are covered. I mean, it's not told exactly the same way, but those stories both are told and very well.
I thought it's clever the way they are able to mesh them together.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
I was so surprised when I read Dance Hall of the Dead and saw that John Shee was not even a character in it. That was quite a surprise.
it was the same with Listening Woman, the first book that they decided to use for the series. That was not a Jim Cheed book either, but there he is. But you know, it's great. I think movies are their own animals, and I think they've done a fine job with Dark Winds. Mm-hmm. And if people think they should follow the books, they can just go back and read the books all over again. Yeah,
that's right. I enjoyed watching the show all the more for having read the books. Uh-huh. So I think it's wonderful. I was just one more question I wanted to ask about. Ooh, did I lose everyone?
No, we're here.
We're still here.
We can hear you.
Okay, I hear and see me. Okay. Now, here's a big question I wanted to ask, and I'm going to do it carefully because new audiences are discovering Dark Winds every day, and I don't want to spoil a mystery for anyone. But let's just say, at the end of season two, our hero, Lieutenant Joe Leaphorn, does something that's illegal, which has repercussions in season three. I don't think Joe ever broke any laws in your father's books or in yours, as far as I've read. Did you have any qualms about him doing so in the show?
Actually, in Dad's last book, Joe Leaphorn does something that was totally different for the whole series. Mm. So I think perhaps it was the Joe Leaphorn of that book was called Shapeshifter. It might have been the Joe Leaphorn in that book that inspired the dilemma that the screenwriters give Joe Leaphorn at the end of season two.
Mm-hmm. 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 And for those who are watching, we just lost Henry. We hope that he'll connect back. Oh, he's
there
back.
He is.
I'm going to have to rewatch the show to find out what it was I got kicked out of.
And then we're gonna have to review Shapeshifter again too.
Yeah. She kind of answered Henry's question with the title Shapeshifter and suggested that might answer your question.
Yeah, about Joe Leaphorn's moral compass.
Yeah.
I don't know, Henry. We can see you. Can you see us and hear us? Okay.
No, you're popping in and out. So I'm just going to be quiet for a while and just listen.
Okay. Well, we are going to, it's a perfect time to just take a very quick break. And then when we come back, we're going to really begin to delve into the Ann Hillerman stories. But right now, we're going to hear a little bit from one of our sponsors, Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison. And if you like our graphic designs, if you follow us on Facebook and Instagram, and you see the reels and the images that are designed for us, that is all the work of Clicks by Madison. Find out what these two companies can do for you as a writer, and we'll be right back. Rendezvous with a Writer is sponsored by Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison, your author publicity and book marketing team. Experienced, trusted, effective. Contact them today at bluecottageagency.com.
Welcome back to Rendezvous with a Writer. Special guest, Ann Hillerman. And what are we holding up here? It's your book.
And Henry, I hope you can see this too. We're holding up Shadow of the Solstice. And here it is. Love it. We're sort of like twins. And we are going to talk about this book in a moment. But first, we want to just talk to Anne a little bit. You know, didn't you enjoy what we went to see on Saturday?
Yeah, the book signing, the talk. That was a big turnout.
You know, listeners, if there's a local store in your area or your library, they're doing book signings, go and support local authors that are coming. They may be local or from out of the area. But just like live music, there is nothing like being in the presence of the author live. And we had the best time at Albuquerque's Bookworks.
Well, Anne had a great story to tell.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Anne, how was that for you, Anne?
I love it. It's such, being a writer is such a strange life. So much of it is just me at my desk with my imaginary friends, you know, hour after hour. So then when the book comes out, if an author is lucky, they get some invitations from bookstores and libraries. And then it's like you have to take off your introverted hat and put on your extroverted hat and talk about your creative process and the characters you love and the story you invented to perfect strangers and then listen to their questions. And it's really, I love it. It's very stimulating. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times the questions that people ask give me ideas for what the next book could be. So yeah, I'm very excited and grateful to be on this book tour. I have about another 2 weeks of doing talks, mostly in New Mexico, but some in Arizona and Colorado, and then some Zooms that let me go all over the country. So yeah, it's great. It's really great. I feel like a new mom.
And when you say, you know, your imaginary friends, and I think that all of us readers, your imaginary friends, they're like our friends, you know, they're on the pages like, oh, it's Bernie. Oh, this is about Bernie again. Oh, this is about Mama.
Some of them aren't friends.
Well, some of them aren't friends. But when you're writing a series, and if you're a reader of the series, they also become our friends, don't they?
Right. You know, I was so lucky. My dad and I never talked about my continuing the series. I was just this year, I'm particularly honored to be launching this book this year because this would have been the 100th birthday of my father. Yeah, he was born in the end of May in 1925. And so the state of Oklahoma, where he was born, about 2 weeks ago, maybe 3 weeks ago, did a special ceremony honoring him. They did a big plaque and put it up in the public library in the county seat where he grew up. And it was just, it was really such a treat to be there and to be kind of seeing how his legacy has continued. And being in Oklahoma made me remember how it was that my dad got to come to New Mexico. He was born in Oklahoma. He got married there, started his career there. He worked at a lot of little newspapers in Oklahoma and in Texas. And at one point he was working for a service called United Press International. And they had an opening for a bureau chief in Santa Fe. So they said to my dad, you know, what would you think about leaving Oklahoma, moving to Santa Fe? And dad said, oh, sure, that sounds like a great adventure. So he and my mom, and I was just, I think, maybe two or three at that point, we all moved to Santa Fe. And after my dad got to Santa Fe, he realized that not only was he the bureau chief, he also was the whole bureau. Dad loved it. And one thing led to another. I don't want to talk about him for hours, although I could, but the move to New Mexico then ultimately led to a move to the University of New Mexico, where after many years as a reporter and newspaper editor, he was able to switch gears into the academic life. And that gave him more time to do what had been his dream, which was to write a novel. So, you know, I'm just so glad, really, that Dad's life worked out the way it did. And although I miss him dearly, I was really grateful, too, that he set up wonderful characters so that after he passed on, I could continue his stories or do my best to try to continue his stories.
Yeah. You've been posting some fun things on your Facebook page. One was a little while ago, a photo of a desk. And I think a guest at the BookWorks event maybe asked
that's
you.
That's a question.
Yeah, asked you about that desk. And would you mind just telling us a little something about that desk?
Oh, no, I'd be glad to. Well, when Dad first started writing, he had an old roll-top desk. And then maybe five or six books. He and my mom moved from the house that they'd first moved to Albuquerque to a bigger house under the cottonwood trees, beautiful part of Albuquerque called Los Ranchos. Anyway, because Dad had more room, he got a bigger desk and he loved that desk. He probably wrote his last five books on that desk. So after he passed away, I was lucky enough to be the trustee of his literary estate. And so I cleaned out his office, and that desk just fit so perfectly in that room that when it came time to sell the house, I said to the person who was buying it, you know, would you like to keep the desk? And she said, oh, sure. So she kept the desk. And then when she moved on, the next buyer kept the desk. But then that buyer was remodeling the place. So she said, she called me and the neighbors around there and said, I really want this desk to go to a good home. So we all worked with her, and it worked out that Dad's desk went to the Navajo Nation Museum. And the museum sent a big truck, two trucks actually, and two workers, and they wrapped it all in bubble wrap as if it was a great Christian relic or something, and put it in the trucks and hauled it off. Yeah. And as part of it, they went to do an exhibit in honor of Dad. And they asked me if I would come and you know, talk or do something with them. And I said, oh, sure. So anyway, I know things move slowly, but I'd be excited to help with that. And I was just so, so thrilled that Dad's desk went to such a fine home.
Yeah.
Thank you for asking me about that story. It's been close to my heart.
Yeah. We love those kind of stories.
Yeah, we do.
we love those stories.
Henry, you want to ask a question? Yeah. Or can you ask a question?
Well, I can, but what I really wanted to ask about, I think sort of would come later.
Okay. Hold it. Hold that thought. We're going to take one more quick break to tell you about one of the places you can order both Anne Hillerman's and Henry Park's books, Shadow of the Solstice and Greatest Westerns Ever Made, and the people who made them. And that is our Out West Shop Bookshop affiliate page at bookshop.org, which is another great place to support independent booksellers. And we will be right back. And then it's all about Shadow of the Solstice. Don't go away. Story is everything. Find a great one on Out West Shop's bookshop. Go to outwestshop.com, find books and CDs on the menu, choose Shop Out West on bookshop.org. Browse through featured authors on Rendezvous with a Writer. Explore curated book lists and our featured picks. Add in note cards, calendars, and jigsaw puzzles. One-stop shopping for great gifts. Use the search box to find thousands more titles. Make the switch. Your purchase supports us as independent booksellers. That's our story.
Welcome back to Rendezvous with a Writer. Special guest Henry C. Park of True West Magazine. And special guest Anne Hillerman. We're going to be talking about this great book here, Shadow of the Solstice. You know, Anne, what kind of a little bit about the storyline and what was the inspiration for the book?
The inspiration for the book actually came from the news. You know, my background, like my dad's, is a reporter and an editor. So I always read the papers and I'm like a new, not so much anymore because I was really paying attention to the news, particularly in the Southwest. And there was a story about the opening of a uranium mine on the south end of the Grand Canyon on private land. And to bring the ore to the mill in Utah, the trucks with uranium ore had to rumble on through the Navajo Nation. And the Navajo Council, Navajo people, Navajo activists, many, many people who remembered the sad heritage of uranium, the cancer, the pollution, they were very much concerned about this. So there was a lot of uproar. And eventually the uranium company agreed to give the Navajo Nation 2 weeks notice if any of these trucks were going to be coming through their land, to cover all the loads, to reduce the any kind of dust or other pollution. And I think the best thing, they also agreed to do some remediation on some of the old mining sites that had been just left abandoned. So as that story unfolded, it just put in my brain not only uranium, but also a lot of other extractive industries. The Navajo Nation is full of oil and gas and coal. And a lot of those stories were stories that started out to be good stories because they were providing jobs for the Navajo people. Mm-hmm. But as time went on, they all had a dark side. So I was thinking, you know, here we are now all concerned about, and a lot of us concerned about climate change and the, you know, protecting the environment. And that maybe there would be the little seed of a story in that, something that could lead to a mystery. So that was one idea I had. Now, because I love my dad, but he gave me sort of a challenge. He created, you know, two strong detectives, Jim Chi and Joe Leaphorn. And then when I started writing the stories, I gave Bernadette Manolito a big role too. So I thought, I can't just have one story. I have to have another strong story. So the other thing in the news about this time was the whole scandal of fake sober living homes. These were places in the Phoenix, Arizona area that had promised help for people with addiction. And they sent white vans into the Navajo Nation and elsewhere in Indian country. And they looked for people who were down and out, maybe people just getting out of jail or people just getting out of the clinic. And they would say, hey, why don't you come? Come with us to Arizona, and we will give you a place to stay. We'll give you some food, and we'll give you help so you can get sober. And a lot of these people said, sure. I mean, they really did want to get sober. And some of them also were kind of desperate. They didn't have any place to live. Maybe their relatives had gotten a little tired of bailing them out. Yeah. So they got on the vans. They went to Arizona. And then the operators of these fake sober living homes signed them up as Arizona residents. A lot of them were from New Mexico, from Utah, from other places, maybe not even in the Southwest. So once they were signed up as Arizona residents, then they got Arizona Medicare. And something like $2 billion was defrauded by the government. And most of these people got no help and basically just warehoused. And when they decided this wasn't going to work for them, and they either asked to be released and sometimes they wouldn't be released. The scoundrels who were doing this just held on to them. Then they had to escape. Then there they were in metropolitan Phoenix with no way home. So this was just such a terrible story. But what made me think I could maybe do something with it in my book was that the Navajo Nation then sent Navajo police officers to the Phoenix area to help look for these people. A lot of times their relatives had contacted the Navajo police, so they kind of knew who they were looking for. Anyway, they would find them and bring them back home to Navajo land. So I thought, gee, maybe there's some way I can work this into a movie and use it in my book. So I know that's a long answer, but those were two main things that really inspired Shadow of the Solstice. And as people who've read my books probably realize, usually when I start with a story, I start with some beautiful place on the Navajo Nation. And then I think, how can I work this lovely thing into my story? But this time it was a little different. I have to say this is a little darker than a lot of my books are, but I hope people will still give this book a good read, because all of these stories end on a happy note. So even if it looks a little dark, don't be discouraged. And I know you want to ask me another question. Thing about writing a mystery is that's the expectation that in the end everything is going to work out. Your protagonist will survive, the crime will be solved, justice will be served, often unlike the way things work out in real life. So that's why I'm happy to be writing mysteries now and not back in journalism.
You told a great story. Yeah. And the fact that you weave in that Medicare program or problem, you might say, was great, because I know that so many people out there don't understand what's going on. They don't understand this even exists. Right. Even people live in Arizona, I'm sure, don't know the problem. So it's great to bring it to our attention.
Well, you know, one thing I did in this book that I don't usually do was do a pretty long author's note at the end, kind of explaining that I didn't, you may think this was an interesting story, but I really didn't have to make it all up, and giving a little bit of the nonfiction background to that story.
And like any good mystery, though, Anne, you start with a dead body on page one, not even a spoiler alert to say that.
Is that a spoiler alert?
Oh my gosh.
But, you know, even then it's a mystery, because the readers don't know who it is or who the person is who's discovered it. Yeah.
No, so, and I think it was until about page 84 or something, I was kind of re-reviewing. It's like, oh, we're this far in before Jim Shee even goes out to the, you hold us in suspense. You hold the reader in suspense as you weave the story. We thoroughly enjoyed it. Let's see. What's our next question?
She and Bernie, who are these people?
Oh yeah. So when you do write, we talked about writing a series a little bit ago, and you do have these returning characters. So Anne, how do they talk to you so that you know that they're still fresh for you to work with them, or do they just say, "Hey, Anne, this is what I want. This is what I want you to do now"? Or do
you? Well, you know, the one key to that is that every book they have new challenges.
Yeah.
So I get to show different sides of their characters. Mm-hmm. And in Shadow of the Solstice, one character who really was talking to me was Darlene Manuelito.
Uh-huh.
That's my main character, Bernadette Manuelito's little sister. And I invented Darlene basically in the first book when I began my version of the Chi Leaphorn series. Hmm. When I elevated Bernadette Manuelito to be a full-fledged crime solver, I knew that I had to give Bernie kind of a backstory because readers really didn't know who she was. Hmm. And part of the way I did that was to create this little sister for her, this Darlene. So now, 10 books later, Darlene was really saying to me, "You know, wait a minute, I'm ready for a bigger role." And so Darlene had been, she has a lot of art talent. She liked to drink. She had some crazy boyfriends, but she's finally decided. I feel like that, like this is like, these are my family. It's so funny to talk about them. Anyway, Darlene has decided now that she wants to become a nurse. So she's going to school to get some training. And as part of that, she's got a job as a home health aide. And so on this job, she's caring for this woman who she really likes, this Navajo lady named Mrs. Raymond. So mm-hmm. she goes on the day that she goes to help Mrs. Raymond, and Mrs. Raymond is not there. So I thought, you know, this was a good, really a good challenge for Darlene and a good way for the readers kind of learn more about her and see, you know, who she is and what her character is like.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a couple of grandmothers in the story. One is, of course, Bernie's mom, and you've just talked a little bit about with Darlene. And then the other character you just mentioned, Mrs. Raymond. Mm-hmm. Two really interesting women. You write really good, interesting women, and we love to see interesting women on the pages.
And they're strong women, you know.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting. You now that I've published my 10th book, I've been thinking. So, if I knew when I started the series what I know now, is there anything I would do different? And one thing I would do different would be to make Bernie and Darlene's mother a little bit younger. But in the book, Bernie's mom and Darlene's mom has declined quite a bit. And so, you know, now she's living with Bernie, which gives Bernie and Jim Chi another challenge. So there's that kind of fading away part for an older woman that I'm writing about with Mama, Darlene and Bernie's mom. And then Mrs. Raymond, on the other hand, is very active. I mean, she has a few health problems, but her brain is sharp. And she is very much of an advocate for her grandson. And that sort of, I can take care of this attitude, is what gets her in trouble and what also gets her out of trouble. So I had great fun writing about Mrs. Raymond. And I've been going around talking about my book, I've gotten several questions, both from the audience when they're talking to me and then after when they come up for me to sign their books, telling me that they liked Mrs. Raymond and saying, "So are you going to put her in another book? Is she going to be a continuing character?" And I hadn't heard that, but
that's a strong lady.
She's a no nonsense woman, so she'd be a good character.
Well, and I think that for the reader, many of us can relate to Mama because we may have that Mama in our lives, or we may have both of those ladies in our lives, depending on, you know, our in-laws situation or what all. So I definitely enjoyed reading those about both of those women. You also, and I think you're going to delight us, one of the things that we talk about is in your books, we learn all kinds of things that we wouldn't necessarily know. And you don't feel like you're sort of having a data dump on us. We feel like it's just woven into the story. And one of the things that we both really enjoyed was your passage about fry bread. And that was something we know kind of about fry bread, but it was like, would you set that up and share that passage?
Sure, sure. I would be glad to. And I have to say, the first talk I did in New Mexico, I did with a woman who spent a long time on the Navajo Nation and also was a mediator. And she read that passage. She said, this is one thing I really liked about this book. And it hadn't dawned on me, especially that was an important passage. I think after a while, a lot of the things I do in my books just kind of come to me naturally. Mm-hmm. So when she pointed that out, I thought, well, yeah, that was pretty darn good. So then I read it when you guys were there at my book signing. I'd love to read it again. So this is a part of the Jim Chi story that has to do with the uranium. There is a group of they position themselves as a family group. They're meditators praying for the success of Mother Earth and the healing of Mother Earth. But of course, since it's a mystery, readers realize pretty quick that there's something else going on. Jim Chi is driving out to talk to these folks. And on the way, he runs into a woman he knows whose car has broken down. And he helps her. And in exchange, she gives him a gift. So that's where this passage starts. An irresistible aroma had begun to fill his patrol unit. He could tell without opening the bag that Mrs. Yazzie had given him fry bread, freshly made from her own kitchen. He started to salivate. He reached in, grabbed the piece on top, as big as a dinner plate, pulled a bit free, and took a bite. He chewed slowly, savoring it as if it were his last meal. Chi knew the arguments against fry bread. This was a food created in captivity and poverty, the nourishment of necessity. Yeah. It had become a traditional food for family gatherings and celebrations. Cooks made it from flour, baking powder, salt, lard, and nostalgia. The U.S. government had given the people the ingredients during their internment after the long walk. When they returned to their homeland, the recipe for puffy, chewy bread came with them and became comfort food for a hungry belly. Fry bread had been part of the cultural heritage of the Navajo and many other tribes for more than a century, despite its origins in hardship. At the moment, Chi needed all the comfort he could get. He finished the still warm bread one serving at a time, then wiped the oil from his fingers on the paper towels Mrs. Yazzie had graciously included. After that, he focused on driving.
That's great.
Let's have some. Do you have some in the kitchen? Are we?
I could have made it up for the night, just for the show.
We have bison chili in the kitchen. We have bison chili that we'll have after the show, but we don't have any fry bread.
Henry, we at the right spot yet for your question?
Henry, jump in.
What I was wondering about is, now your dad wrote a wonderful article called Building Without Blueprints about how he had, when he started writing his novels, he would outline them in great detail. And found that that did not work. It really inhibited where he wanted the story to go and where the characters wanted to go. And I was wondering how much outlining you do before you start writing.
Zero.
There you go.
But zero outlining. I do think about it, though. I mean, I think, like I said earlier, I think of where should the story unfold? I just feel so honored that Dad set his stories on the Navajo Nation and that I can continue to use that beautiful landscape as a setting. So I think of that. And then I think of these three characters. Who should be the lead person and how am I going to work the other two in? So I think of all of that. And then based on the landscape, I think what would be a logical crime for them? crime that would that could happen here. So that's normally my process. And then I just start, I think, I kind of think of I just start writing, basically. It's kind of a spiral process. And when I reach a place where the spiral is stuck, then I might go back and see where did I go wrong? And I just keep sort of working at it until I get a first draft put together. And I have to say, I really admire people who can write from outlines. I think it's a much cleaner process. It would probably save a lot of time. But it's sort of like, if I know where the story's going, then I don't need to write it. As I'm writing it, I discover what's going to happen next. And for me, that's the joy and the motivation to keep writing.
Henry, do you have another question? That was a good one.
Oh, no. Come up with something brilliant.
Well, when you're talking about writing in a spiral, and in this book, we have two kind of major plots, and then you beautifully connect them. But the book will kind of like, okay, we're kind of into what's happening in Arizona, and okay, we're over here and we're kind of working with the uranium situation. Do you write like one of those stories kind of all the way through, and then figure out how to, and then you write, you know, how to bring it? Oh, now I'll bring in a chapter. Do you know what? I don't even know that.
All right, above
the
same.
I don't know if that I'm explaining.
I know what you're asking. No, usually what I do is write on one story until I think, oh, what should I do now? And if I don't know, then I go back to the other story. And usually in the time that I've been away from it, my subconscious has figured out where that story would go. So I kind of alternate them back and forth. In this book, the big challenge was the timing. Story of the environmental problem resolved itself before the other story resolved itself. So I thought, well, wait a minute, I can't just have six chapters here at the end about the fake sober home. Something, I gotta get this all figured out. So that was tough, but luckily I had a really, really good freelance editor who not only knew a lot about mysteries, but also had lived on the Navajo Nation and was really just smart in a lot of ways, and just asked me some questions that helped me figure out how to resolve that. So I think the book is, what I said earlier about writing being solitary, I think doing the first draft, doing the book that goes to the editor is solitary.
That's all.
But then after that, it's really more of a community process. And I am so grateful to my dad and to my experience in journalism for giving me a lot of respect for good editors.
Mm-hmm. When did the title reveal itself to you? Did you know that in the beginning or...
No. This was a hard title. This book, I loved the opening scene, and I can say that because it doesn't spoil anything. The body that's discovered, it's discovered because the person who discovers it sees a hat and then a silver hat band. So my first title was The Dead Man's Hat. I loved the title, but my editor did not like that title. She said, no. You can't use that title. And the more I thought of it, the more I thought it's not really a good title because it doesn't have anything to do with the whole second story. So then I thought of other titles, and all of them were pretty bad. And then my editor thought of titles, and a lot of hers were bad. And then finally, together, we just came up with Shadow of the Solstice. And I liked it because the solstice is what really connects both stories.
Yep.
So I was happy in it. It took a long time, but I think it was worth the effort.
We have one last break. And then when we come back, this is for thanking our sponsors who are our business, outwestshop.com. When we come back, we're going to find out, Anne, what you're working on next and where to find you. And Henry, the same question for you. So don't go away. We'll be right back. I think.
Here at the Out West Shop, we're passionate about the American West, the truth and the myth. We're purveyors of fine Western goods. We scout for unique and distinctive apparel, accessories, home decor, and general merchandise that are a reflection of the Western lifestyle. We hunt for unique artisans and craftsmen who are inspired to create decorative art you can wear based on their own love for the story of the West. We round it up and bring it to you. Check out OutWestShop.com when you need anything Western.
Welcome back to My New Writer. And we were just about ready to ask, where can we find you and what are you working on next? Yeah.
I'm working on the 11th book in the Bernie Manuelito, Jim G, Joe Leaporn series. And if you go to my website, annhillerman.com, you'll see the list of my talks that are coming up.
And Henry, what about you?
Well, I haven't seen it yet, but I understand that the May-June issue of True West is out, and it's mostly about American primeval, and I've got
We don't have May-June either. So we're waiting on it also.
That and also at my website, Henry's Western Roundup, I have an interview with Cynthia Rothrock, who is a great martial arts star who just made her first Western, Black Creek, which is just great fun.
Wonderful.
Yeah, you'd mentioned that before that's coming up. It's we're going to be interested in seeing that.
Yeah. And we have one last question for you. You really believe in the supporting of libraries. And I know here, even in New Mexico, there's all kinds of money challenges. Can you just give us some reasons why libraries continue to be so important, or whatever you'd like to say about supporting libraries?
I have a wonderful invitation to go up to Cuesta to talk about my new book. I'm really excited about it. And I'm also going to be talking to the Friends of the Los Lunas Public Library. I think libraries are just so vital for democracy. Libraries level the playing field. They give people who don't have computers a chance to get online. They give people who maybe have a hard time seeing a chance to see big type books. And reference librarians are better than Google.
Oh, yeah. I have a brother-in-law that was a reference librarian. Yes, I'm with you on that. Well, let's see. Jim, do you have a quote?
We have a quote. And this quote's from the book. And this passage is about Lieutenant Chi, who we've been talking about. As he waited for the agents in OMI to arrive, she watched the thin clouds assemble and drift apart again overhead. A raven scolded from a tree, then soared away from him in the blueness. He considered calling the hospital to check on Captain Adekai, and then reconsidered. There was no reason to ask for more bad news. Trouble already had his address. You like that passage?
Oh, thank you. That's great.
We want to thank both our guests tonight, Ann Hillerman and Henry Park, for being with us this evening. This is episode 134, and you can catch it immediately on LA Talk Radio's Facebook page or the Rendezvous with a Writer Facebook page. And shortly, it will also be up on Podbean for Spotify and all those places that maybe you like to listen to audio. Next week, we have another mystery writer with us. Mark Edward Langley will be with us. We'll be talking about his Arthur Nakai mystery series. And he has sent us a PDF of his next book, not yet out. We don't even have a cover to show you. It is Bloodlines, a Sky Roan Horse novel. And we will be talking about that next week. Do you have anything else?
Is it?
I guess. My goodness.
We've come to the end. It's hard to believe we had a great time. We thank you too, you know?
Yes. Thank you so much for this delightful. And then, Anne, when the next book is out, you know where you need to be.
Okay. It's a deal. Thank you.
And Henry, we'll see you next month.
Nice to talk with you.
Okay, thank you. And say that again.
I said nice to talk. If I've got audio.
We got you. All right.
And we always say it's always a great day out west.
Keep writing. We'll keep reading. See you down the trail.